Hey, alright, it's the country. Back from a almost 3-year hiatus. We sure are happy to have you. My name is Justin Weller, and you are listening to The Country Podcast, recorded on Monday, August 21st, 2023. And like I said, we've been off for almost 3 years. You know, this podcast started during COVID. You remember that? COVID, right? Right around the lockdowns, way back in early 2020. I, like everybody else, was sitting around their house with no sports on, no places to go, cut my own hair, making all my own food, living like along with my family, like we're in some sort of solitary confinement or close quarter confinement, right? So here we are, almost 3 years later. We had a great time making that podcast, but of course I had another job and a family to raise and all those good things. And, you know, quite honestly, just couldn't find the time, didn't make it a priority, if we're honest with ourselves, to do this show on a regular basis. And so at the moment that it started to feel like sort of a job, sort of a second job that I wasn't putting all my all into, I kind of got away from it. But it's been bugging me ever since, And, you know, sometimes in your life, and maybe this doesn't happen often, but sometimes in your life, you start to understand that what you're doing maybe isn't the best thing for you. And by that, I mean that, you know, I've had a great career. I worked for 30 years in enterprise sales, and I may go back to it at some point. I've recently decided to embark on this journey of the country. So what do I mean by that? I'm gonna see if I can make this work, right? So I appreciate all you wonderful podcast listeners out there giving us a shot. It would really, really help us tremendously if you're on the Twitter, if you're on the X, if you would go on there and find at JW, just the letters, JW, the country. That's me on Twitter. If you want to give us a follow there. What would also be so awesome if you went to thecountry.news, www.thecountry.news, and you can subscribe for free there. We're going to be blogging there. We're going to be posting podcasts. Who knows what else we might do? We're going to work on some music too. So we just really appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support, and we're trying to get this thing off the ground. So share it with 1,000 of your friends, and like I said, visit us on Twitter and start following at JW The Country, and go to thecountry.news and sign up for emails, subscriptions. And then, of course, we're going to be all over the podcast network. I put these on Podbean, so if you're there, it's thecountry.podbean.com. But you can find us on Apple, on Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, we should be there. So thank you so much for subscribing, and let's get started. So with that, you know, with what we want to talk about first is our vision for this enterprise, this undertaking. We're calling it the Country Media Company. And so, like we said, we're going to, you know, find a way. I don't know if podcasts are the right thing. I don't know if blogs are the right thing. I'm probably going to try and write a book. I've got some music things that I'm plotting to start. But the important thing for this podcast is we really want to talk about the country. And what do we mean by that, right? Like, it's easy to say the country, the country, the country. What I mean is what's best for the American people. And I think that's really, really foundational. And it's really important in today's political landscape. You know, I think it's really hard to find someone that's looking out for the people, that actually is running the government, writing legislation, executing that legislation, administering the services to the American people in a way that they would want. And I think that if you look at our leaders, if you look at our political parties, if you look at the folks that are, you know, for lack of a better term, running things, they sure don't seem to focus very much on the American people. I mean, there's a lot of platitudes, there's a lot of talk. But, you know, there's a great saying, and the older I get, the more I use it. I know you by what you do. not what you say. And so, yeah, I mean, if you listen to a politician speak, and especially the good ones, they say everything you want to hear. And they give you the things that you think you need, or that they've convinced you that you need, like a fight about abortion, or a fight about gun control, or a fight about, you know, whatever the latest greatest is, whatever the thing. They call it wedge issues, right? So it's issues that they know that the American people are divided on, and so they keep them constantly going, so that they'll always have a reason to ask you for money. They'll always have a way to get you angry at the other side, and get you to get out and vote. And, you know, that's really where they're at and what they're trying to accomplish. So a good example of that is abortion, right? I mentioned it before. So, like, we all know the Dobbs decision came down in early 2022. And that was a huge decision. It's a landmark decision. It's for, you know, 50-year change in policy. And, you know, there was a lot of talk, and the Democrats ran their entire midterm congressional campaign in 2022 on Dobbs and on restoring Roe v. Wade. And what should have been a red wave election, an overwhelmingly Republican election, turned into, you know, a whimper, right? Couple Senate changes, but basically status quo there, where the Democrats retained control in the Senate, and certainly the Republicans took over the House, but not nowhere near what they expected. And, you know, from my perspective, that's because of Dobbs. And you notice, and again, I know you by what you do, not what you say. So the entire campaign, the Democrats were campaigning, we're going to protect women's health care, we're going to restore Roe versus Wade. They had the opportunity, man. They had the White House. They had both houses of Congress in 2022. They could have passed a law that encoded Roe v. Wade or something like it. I think actually it would have ended up as a compromise between 15 and 20 weeks limit on abortion, except in very rare cases. That's what almost, I think it's something like all but two countries in Europe have a similar law. They did it decades ago. There's no controversy in England or Germany or France or Spain politically about abortion. Like, they don't spend any time on it in national politics because it's already been decided. And I guess you could argue, hey, that's what Roe v. Wade did. But, you know, that was decided by a court. We're talking about the actual elected officials restoring deliberative democracy and doing their job. And so they didn't do that in 2022. And why didn't they? Because it was their best issue. They had nothing to run on. But you can sure get out the vote, especially with women, obviously, or especially with single women, younger folks who don't show up for midterm elections. You know, they came out to vote for Dobbs. They came out to vote for Roe v. Wade. And so think of that. Your leaders decided that it's more important that they could use this issue to wedge you into voting and in fact, keeping them in power and getting their votes than doing something that you would want them to do, which is pass a law. They didn't try. They didn't try to pass that law. Go back and look. They didn't at all. But the entire campaign, the entire messaging was about abortion. And so here we are, what, you know, year and a half later, same thing. It'll be on the be in the discussion this next election. And, you know, if you look at the game side of politics, well, you know, wow, isn't that great for the Democrats, right? They sure are smart, and they are really good at the game. But again, what did they do for the American people? Nothing. They ginned them up, they got their money, they got their votes, and on they move, right? And, you know, look, Republicans do this too. I don't have a recent example. You know, I'm sure I could figure it out if I thought about it here for a minute. But I don't want that to be about Democrats versus Republicans. It's an example of what I'm talking about, which is your leadership not doing the things that you need, not working for the American people, but sort of the opposite, getting the American people to work for them, to raise money, get out the vote, etc. So this is what we mean when we talk about the country. We're outside the Beltway. We're not in that Washington blob where everybody there including the media, including most of the people you see on TV, they're heavily invested in telling you one thing and doing another. I guarantee you. And so I want you to think about that as you hear what folks are saying in their speeches and watching debates. We have a debate coming up tomorrow night. We'll do a podcast after it, probably Wednesday, sort of a companion podcast, sort of talk through our thoughts on it. But I want you to think about that. Like, is this really something that that person's going to do, or is it something they're saying to score political points, to get your vote, and then they'll go to do whatever the hell they had planned to do in the first place? So I really want you all to think about that. And that's why we're here. That's what we hope to accomplish. That's what we hope to add to the world. And, you know, I really hope that you all hold us accountable to that, too. It's not going to be easy. You know, everybody knows I'm a right winger. I have always voted Republican. I did vote third party a couple times. I voted for Ross Perot. And I think I voted for Ron Paul as a write-in one time. So I'm a libertarian sort of right winger, right? And so, you know, my view will likely usually skew that way. But I want to protect the American people. I want to think about what my friends on the left think. And I'd love for them to come on and talk with me about how we can build bridges together and start to work together on common issues for the country and not for the parties and not for the leaders, for the people. So I hope that makes sense. So we're going to move on here. I want to talk about two issues today. It's been a long time since we talked to y'all, so there's a lot to cover. But two things that I really want to cover today. I'm just going to do it briefly. We're getting warmed up here. But I want to talk about Ukraine. And, you know, when the Ukraine war first started, you know, I was donating to the Ukraine people. And don't get me wrong, good grief. What an awful tragedy for the people of Ukraine right now. There's reports that as many as 500,000 people have died in that conflict so far. Many of them, obviously, are civilians. And there's absolutely no end in sight. And so, you know, when that first started, you know, I kind of drank the Kool-Aid. I kind of, you know, God forbid, didn't really understand what was happening. And but I've read a lot since then, so I want to give you just sort of a brief background of what's happening. And the top line is this war has nothing to do with American interests. The American people gain nothing over a border dispute in Eastern Europe that's been going on, quite frankly, for centuries. Did you know that Russia was founded, like the Russian Empire, the old Russian Empire? The first place that was founded was Kiev in the Ukraine. And even today, there are many Russian speakers that want to be Russian. There are many Ukrainians who want to have their own country. But it's not as simple as you've been led to believe. And so, just going back a bit, you know, obviously the Ukraine was an SSR. It was part of the Soviet Union. And when the Soviet Union crashed in the late 80s, early 90s, Ukraine declared independence. The crazy thing is that they not only found themselves in control of Chernobyl, but also a huge stockpile of nuclear weapons that used to be the Soviet Union's that now were in Ukraine. And obviously, there was a lot of concern about that. The former Soviet republics were unstable. It was uncertain who was in real control. And both, quite honestly, Russia, the United States, the United Kingdom were really concerned about these missiles, about these nuclear arms that were in Ukraine. And so we were entered into a treaty. It was called the Budapest Memorandum. And Ukraine agreed to trade away its intercontinental ballistic missiles, warheads, and other nuclear infrastructure in exchange for guarantees that the three other treaty signatories, the U.S., the U.K., and Russia, will respect the independence and sovereignty of the existing borders of Ukraine. And it's been widely reported that at that point, we also struck a deal with Russia that NATO would not move eastward towards Russia. And there's a number of folks that warned in the late 90s that any moves of NATO to the east would make Russia upset, would start to make them feel like they needed to defend themselves. This was debated and well known. And if you really think about it, once the Soviet Union collapsed, what is the point of moving NATO eastward towards Russia? Who are we defending against? I mean, we had a huge opportunity there in the late 90s, early 2000s. You've got this young republic. They've, you know, separated from the Soviet Union. They want to be free. They want to be, and so is Russia, right? Like, this is the main point, is Russia is this way too. They threw off the guys that were running the Soviet Union, the communists, and they said, we want to build a country. We want to be a capitalist society. We had every opportunity as Americans to embrace that spirit, to work with Russia and Ukraine and all of the other former Soviet countries, to be friends and allies and seek peace. Instead, the decision was made to treat Russia as an adversary, and we started adding countries into NATO that began to move eastward towards Russia. That's right. The Czech Republic in 99, Hungary in 99, Poland in 99, Bulgaria in 2004, Estonia in 2004, then Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, Slovak Republic, Slovenia, all in 2004 as well. Then Albania in 2009, Croatia in 2009, Montenegro in 2017, North Macedonia in 2020. Now look, some of those are Southern Europe, certainly, but they're all eastward. We're moving NATO eastward towards Russia. Okay, look, and as a sidebar, I know that you, what comes next, right? You're just a Putin apologist, right? You're just a Russian plant. You're just helping Russia. You know, that's just a silly, double-sided simpleton's argument. It's like saying if you criticize the Catholic Church, you're for the devil. It's ludicrous on its face, you know? And I don't understand why anybody who wants to seriously consider what's important for the American people would be so dismissive of a concept that says, hey, you've been encroaching on Russia's satellite, you know, sphere of influence ever since the Russian Federation began. And just to say, oh, that's pro-Putin and you're a traitor or whatever you want to say, it's ludicrous on its face, okay? I'm a proud American and I believe in our Constitution, in the ideas that our founding fathers promulgated around that Constitution, on the wars that we've fought to ensure that that Constitution succeeds and improves for everybody in America and around the world. So, you know, you really should question anybody that just says, oh, he's a Putin apologist. What are they really trying to convince you of? And why won't they engage on the subject, do you think? Do you think it's because they don't really have an argument? Maybe it could be. So anyway, we've been encroaching for years and years and years. And then, you know, some shady stuff went down around 2013 and 2014. There are many claims that the United States was heavily involved, the CIA was heavily involved in destabilizing and ultimately overthrowing the pro-Russian government in Ukraine. The president at the time was a gent named Yanukovych, and he announced that just days before they were going to sign an agreement to sort of move closer to the European Union, that they were not going to do that. And he cited pressure from Russia as a reason for his decision. Now, most folks think he was pro-Russian. As I said, you know, there are pro-Russian Ukrainians, there are pro-European America, European Union, America, Ukrainians. So, you know, just because he's a pro-Russian Ukrainian doesn't mean he isn't the president and shouldn't be running his country, right? But that happened. And then soon after, he was overthrown. And there is much reporting on the CIA helping to overthrow that person. And certainly, you cannot argue that in 2014, Ukraine went from being, you know, majority Russian influence to not through that overthrowing of the government, and Ukraine became a Western ally after that. And lo and behold, what happened right after that? Putin invaded Crimea, and Putin, I should say, sorry. And they took over Crimea because they needed a port in that, and Crimea is a major strategic area there. And that was the first incursion by Russian troops into the Ukraine. So as that happened, and after that happened, did you know that the Donbas, the region in the eastern part of Ukraine that is currently the source of all the attention, has continued? There's been fighting in the Donbas since, you know, shortly after that 2014 coup. And Russia's repeatedly striked in a series of cyber attacks, busted the power grid. They made an assault on Ukrainian infrastructure. And all of that sort of weakened the existing government that had been propped up. And there was an election in 2019 where Zelensky got elected as a rebuke of the status quo, which includes a stagnating economy and the conflict with Russia. And during his campaign, Zelensky vowed to make peace with Russia and end the war in the Donbas. His early efforts to reach a solution to the violence are slowed by President Trump, who briefly blocks U.S. military aid to Ukraine. And it suggests these should instead work with Putin to resolve the crisis. So yeah, Trump has some part to play in here, as do we all, right? At the end of the day, we're all the American people. But then, you know, Russia started to escalate in 2021. They put some troops on the border. And in December of 2021, Biden, speaking with Putin on a phone call, warned of real cost if Russia invades Ukraine. Putin then issued a contentious set of security demands. It certainly is contentious, but listen to them. He asked NATO to permanently bar Ukraine from membership and withdraw forces stationed in countries that joined the alliance after 1997, including Romania and Balkan countries. He also wanted a written response from the U.S. and NATO. So eventually we respond and tell them, no, we're not going to bar Ukraine from entering NATO, and boom, there's the invasion. Now look, as any war, there's blame on both sides, right? But I do think it's important to just sort of take the actors out of the play for a second. Now, just imagine these roles were reversed and, Russia or another actor like China is talking about a military alliance with Mexico, and for years has been working towards a pro-Chinese Mexican government that will eventually join a treaty of non-aggression against the United States right on our border. And imagine the lengths that we would go to defend that place. We might invade Mexico. You never know. So I just want to consider that, okay? And secondarily, before I move on, I think the point to make here is that while you may disagree with Putin and the Russian actions, since the fall of the Soviet Union, when it, you know, vis-a-vis Ukraine. It's rational action. They are trying to defend their borders. They are trying to defend what they view as an encroachment by the West on their sphere of influence, on their strategic sort of presence. Certainly, access to open ports down there in Crimea and the Black Sea is extremely important. And at some point, they decided that it was worth the risk of war to protect that interest. It's a rational decision. It might be wrong, but it's rational. It's not some evil, you know, Dr. Evil, you know, some James Bond character just trying to exert evil on the world, okay? That's not what it is. And certainly, there's plenty of evil in war, and I bet we can find it on both sides. In fact, by the way, the United States, the official policy of the United States in Ukraine in 2021, and this came from the press secretary at the White House, Jen Psaki, P-S-A-K-I, just Google it, you'll find it. She said that if Russia used cluster bombs in the war in Ukraine, it would be considered war crimes. War crimes. And then not even a year later, we agreed, the United States agreed to send cluster bombs to Ukraine. It's a war crime, people. And it just gets a pass. And I was just reading about how effective those cluster bombs have been in slowing Russian forces. And what do we mean? They're killing people, right? So, you know, we have no moral high ground in this battle. We have done precisely what we said war criminals would do. And we continue to escalate. We're now talking about sending, and we've approved sending F-16s to Ukraine. And, you know, this thing can spiral out of control in a heartbeat. And it's really chilling. Okay. And you have to consider that. What is the risk that's associated? Well, the risk is nuclear annihilation. It's World War III. And what do we get for that risk? It's an argument over a territory that is about the size of Connecticut, that has been disputed for decades, that, quite frankly, again, Russia was founded in Ukraine and Kiev. It was a Soviet Union state. It is not unreasonable to think that if the United States broke up and Florida became an independent state, that one day the United States might want Florida back or have some issues with what Florida is doing with China, etc. Right? You get my point. So there's a whole lot of risk here. What interest are we serving? What interest does the American people have? Do the American people have for a factory worker in Ohio, for an oil and gas company in Houston, for a podcaster in Tampa, Florida? What do I get with these hundreds of billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of lives that we are spending in Ukraine? What do I get? What are we going to get by doing all of this? And the answer is nobody knows. It's just another forever war happening thousands of miles away that no one can foresee how we win, when it ends. They're now reporting it could last for more, you know, years and years. And there's literally no strategy in sight. But you know what is happening? Is every defense contractor in America is getting rich. Because, you know, when we send $100 million, quote-unquote, we send, quote-unquote, $100 million, billion dollars to Ukraine, most of that money just goes to the defense contractors. We're buying bullets, we're buying tanks, we're buying missiles, we're buying all these things from those guys. So Ukraine's getting nothing. They're not getting any money out of that. They're just getting some shells to shoot at Russians. Okay? And, you know, when I look around this country, there are a lot more things, better things for the American people that we could be spending $100 billion on than this farce of a war that, quite frankly, might be being fought simply because President Zelensky and other powerful interests in Ukraine have the goods on the Bidens. And then there's another related fact, and we'll get into this another day, but you remember those early stories in Ukraine when it first happened about biolabs? We were concerned we had to save our biolabs from the Russians finding them. What sort of biolab would we need to save from the Russians? Well, you know, I think it isn't crazy to think that that biolab might be a weapons biolab. Say one like the one that Fauci was funding in Wuhan. Yeah, that's right, folks. He was funding them in Ukraine as well. And so, you know, you might want to start ask some questions of our leaders about that. So those are my thoughts on Ukraine. The other thing I wanted to just, man, I didn't mean for this podcast to be this first one this long. So I just want to say briefly that we have a humanitarian crisis, probably the worst humanitarian crisis going on in America, perhaps the worst one in the history of America. Did you know that? And it's not the fires in Maui. And, you know, that's an awful story, and I feel terrible for the families out there. But I'm talking about the U.S. border with Mexico. It is a disaster. It is an unmitigated disaster. I mean, from the number of folks that die on the journey to the despicable crimes that happen along the border, including rape, child slavery, the importation of sex slaves, the importation of the leading cause of death in America, which is fentanyl overdoses. They're all occurring right along this border. And no one is fixing it. And nothing is being done. They're auctioning off the parts for the wall that Trump has laying out there, ready to put up. And they're doing nothing to stop it. There have been more folks coming across that border, more fentanyl coming across that border, than there have in the history of our border with Mexico. And, you know, talking about leaders and what they say and what they do. Remember when AOC went to the border when President Trump was president, and she was crying at the border for all the humanitarian crisis? Well, where's she now? It's three times as bad. And there's absolutely nothing being done. It's unfathomable. What is the federal government doing right now? They spend $6 trillion a year. They have 4 million employees. And we don't have a border. And we have thousands of people dying every day on that border. We have thousands of people dying from fentanyl overdoses coming across that border. And our country, our leaders, our government is not doing anything to fix it. The country cannot stand for this anymore. I don't care who you are, Democrat, Republican, whatever. You need to get on the phone with your congressperson, with your senator. You need to call the White House and tell them to stop the crisis at the border. It has to end. And it has to end now. Why do we tolerate this? Why do we tolerate our cities looking like third world zombie zones? What are our leaders doing? I just don't know. So we want to talk more about this. We think it's a whole other podcast to talk about the border and fentanyl. Gosh, I just watched Dope Sick. We'll bring that in there. This is as far as we're going to go today on the country. We sure appreciate you listening. And like I said, we're just trying to get this thing off the ground. So if you can go to Twitter and follow us at JW The Country. And if you can also check us out at thecountry.news. That's our website, www.thecountry.news. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love for you to participate. We'd love to hear about, you know, your ideas for a blog or a podcast or anything like that. We're open to all of it. And we have the presidential debate coming up tomorrow night for the Republican primary. We'll see if the big orange man shows up. It sounds like no. And we'll be doing a debate podcast soon after. So check us out. We hope to see you soon. See ya.
Tree.